Gibbs, founder of Incandescent Public Relations, publisher of Being Incandescent Business Magazine, and your host for the Incandescent Entrepreneur Show on the Incandescent Radio Network, the voice of entrepreneurs. American poet, musician, and composer Michael Franti and his band Spearhead have been rocking their message of peace, love, and social justice since 1994. Blending funk, reggae, jazz, folk, and rock, their new album is All People. Tonight, they are part of Warren Haynes' Christmas Jam here in Asheville, North Carolina, and we have the privilege of interviewing Michael before the show at his gorgeous hotel. Welcome to the Incandescent Entrepreneur Show, Michael. We are so thrilled to have you with us.
Great to be here.
Pleasure to have you. So tell us, you are our Entrepreneur of the Month for my magazine, Be Incandescent.
Thank you.
And our goal is to spread your message, which is really awesome, this idea of do it for the love, which is your nonprofit organization.
My better half, Sara, is an emergency room nurse. And so for the last couple of years, we've been trying to figure out, is there a way that we could combine what she does with music and healthcare? I mean, with healthcare, with what I do with music. And so we came up with this idea of Do It for the Love Foundation, which brings people with advanced stages of life-threatening illness and kids with severe challenges and wounded veterans to live concerts. And I've been making music and touring for 27 years, and over the years I've had a lot of people come up to me and say, you know, I have a friend who's close to dying and they'd really love to meet you, they'd really like to come to a show. And I've been to Iraq and played music on the streets there for both Iraqi civilians as well as U.S. soldiers, played in Walter Reed Hospital, and I came back and have met a lot of veterans along the way at our shows. And we've met a lot of families who bring their kids to our concerts who have kids with special needs. And so we started the foundation in August. And
just this August?
Just
August 2013?
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's really taken off. We started with just, just the two of us, thinking, oh, we'll get somebody to work part-time with us or volunteer. And then we, within the first month, had to hire a full-time person, and now we're about to hire our second. And it's been a really amazing outpouring of support from fans that come to our shows and people in business who have put on events for us. Mm-hmm. We just did one at the Whitehall Winery up in Napa, California. Done several other events in people's homes around the country. But the best part about it is to meet people. You know, like last night we were in Florida, and there's a woman who is, she's 20 years old, she has lymphoma, like a lymph disorder. She's had it since she was a baby. She's had a very difficult life. She's had over 20 surgeries because of it. The last couple of years she's been in university from the hospital, and her disease has worsened now to the point where she's had to stop going to school. She was an honors student, even with all the sickness. And a friend of hers got in touch with us, and they all flew down to Florida to our show, and they were able to pull it off so that she was surprised. She didn't know where she was going. And I sat there and talked with her, and she said, I've lived with pain my whole life. She was on oxygen, at the show. So I've lived with pain my whole life, and it's just getting worse and worse. And I know I'm going to be this. I don't have many years, if even a year, to live. And she said, "But you know what? I'm so worried about the world right now. It's like I see so many things happening in the world that are so difficult for people. And if I could take away all their pain for even just like 15 minutes by giving it all to me, I would take it on like that." And I was so moved by that to hear like this 20-year-old woman say that, and to meet her younger brother, her younger brother's friend, who was both 17, who had pulled this whole thing off to get her there, through our foundation. It was really great.
That is awesome. But that's a big theme for you too, is social justice and taking on the world's problems and trying to come up with solutions.
Yeah.
What inspired you to have that be your mission?
Well, when I was a kid, my birth mother carried me for 9 months, and then she held me for 1 hour, and she gave me up for adoption. I was adopted by the Franti family, and they're Finnish Americans, second generation in this country. They had three kids of their own, and they adopted myself and another African American son. And I grew up in this very mixed household. My mother was a school teacher in public schools in California for 30 years, and it was five of us kids, and we'd be at home, you know, pulling each other's hair apart and like tying each other up, and she'd come home and have to separate us and then get us all fed and doing our homework. And she was very, really a leader in our house, you know. And she was insistent that even though all of us kids are different heights and colors, and I have one sister who's lesbian, and we had different ideas about the world, she was insistent that all of us kids be treated the same, and that we all had the same opportunities to succeed. And I really learned that, you know, ethic from her, and I believe it's the same for the whole world. All of us should have the same rights and be given the same opportunities and as much as we can to succeed. And where we see places where that's not happening, it takes the efforts of the rest of us to chip in, to try to give a boost to people who need it, whether it's because of war or poverty or because of you know, climate change is affecting people all around the world. And, you know, you see it, and you don't see it so much here because we're so, you know, we have so much power and so much energy. But I was in East Timor recently, and I saw families there, and they were all raising ducks instead of chickens. I said, "Well, why did you guys switch to ducks?" And they said, "Well, because we used to have this very long rainy season where the rain sort of came slowly, but now our rainy season is shorter and it's drier. But when the rain comes, everything floods,
and ducks flood."
So climate change is really, you know, it's affecting people in parts of the
world.
Brilliant. So these are things that, you know, I write about and try to work on as much as I can.
And you've really traveled all over the world with your message.
Yeah. You know, I've had a great opportunity to play for people in so many countries and in so many different circumstances, you know. We play in prisons, we played in schools, we played on the street. You saw me today, I was out there just
trying to
on the street. You know, we play all over the world, but the thing that I find is that doesn't matter where you play, doesn't matter what economic sphere people are in, or what education, or what culture, or language, or religion, people are the same when the music starts. You know, you look into their eyes, you see smiles, you see people start to dance, you see people start to move. Eventually people laugh, they cry, they hug their friends, you know, and music really is a universal language. And one of my favorite things to do is to travel and to play with people of other cultures, other musical experiences that I didn't know about.
Yeah, and your concerts are so much fun. I told you before the interview that I saw you at the House of Blues in Houston.
Yeah.
And it was the most fun concert I have been to. You throw out the balls and they tap them around. That's amazing, and everyone's dancing, and you bring the kids up on stage, and all those couples that sing your songs at their play their songs at their weddings.
Yeah.
It's just a thrill to be part of that.
Yeah, it's really the most rewarding aspect of what I do is to be able to see people get happy. You know, before I was really traveling and touring as a musician, I worked as a doorman at a nightclub, you know, and I was a bike messenger for 3 years, and I, you know, just remember being a bike messenger. You know, I deliver these checks to people for hundreds of thousands of dollars. I deliver architectural plans for buildings that were worth millions of dollars, and no one ever clapped. They barely said thank you. It was usually just sign this thing and that's it, you know. So now, you know, I get to really, you know, make people happy. It's fun.
How did you hook up with Warren Haynes?
Well, Warren and I have known each other for probably 10 or 12 years now. I just met him at a festival one time that we were playing at. And Warren is one of the nicest people that I know in music. He's really a kind-hearted person, and he's really a giver. You know, this Christmas Jam is, you know, one of the beneficiaries of it is Conscious Alliance, which is a huge food bank that collects food all over the country and distributes it to people in need. But he's also a giver with music. So this festival is not just let's hire 10 bands to play. He brings in individuals from, I don't know, 50, 60, 70 different bands.
Yeah.
And then he creates these collaborations that he sort of goes, you know, Michael, I think you'd really like to play some stuff. The first time we did it was about 4 years ago. And Warren came backstage and said, Michael, you got a minute? And I go, sure. And he goes, is everything all right? He's like, yeah. He goes, it's just, you know, this guy who wants to sit in with me. I go, sure. Who? He goes, John Paul Jones from Led Zeppelin. Would you mind doing a song with him? And I was like, my mouth hit the floor. And I was like, oh, of course, I'll do a song with him. So John Paul Jones came backstage. He brings his mandolin. And Jay, my guitarist, and I were back there jamming away. And he walks in the room, and he gets his mandolin out, and he starts playing this song with us. And we're like so happy, you know, we're like blown away. We play another song. Finally, we had done a whole set of music, probably like 12 songs backstage. And I right before we were walking on, I said, John, is there a song that you wanted to play on? And he goes, oh, Michael, I thought I'd play mandolin on the first four, and then I'd play bass on the next five, and then I'd play drums on the last three. I was like, all right, dude, let's do it. Wow. And he ended up playing the whole set with us. So that's the type of magic that occurs here. And, you know, if you can imagine what it's like for us as artists to have those kind of thrills, it's like that even more when, you know, as a fan, I'm out in the audience and watching these great collaborations occur. So.
Yeah, it's awesome. Really, Greg Allman, Government Mule, Grace Potter and the Nocturnals. Yeah. It's quite the lineup tonight. Yeah, my husband and my videographer, Steve, we're all excited to come here and play, nice. And our kids too. So tell us a little bit more about your career. You started Spearhead in 94, but that was your third band?
My third band. I had my first band is a little punk rock band called the Beatniks in 1986, 87, 88. And then in 89 and 90, I had a band called Disposable Heroes of Hypocrisy. And we had a video and a song called Television, the Drug of the Nation, which became sort of like a little minor league hit internationally. Didn't really do much here, but U2 heard the song and loved the video. And so they used the video to open their Zoo TV tour in 1992, and they invited us to then become the opening act. So here we were going from this little band in this driving around the country in a little white van to then still being a little white van but following U2 on tour to play in these, you know, the stadium. Like we, I remember after the show we played in Yankee Stadium, and at the time the Pope, Nelson Mandela, and Billy Joel were the only people who had done a performance there apart from, you know, then U2 played there, you know. And so after the show, I joke with Bono. I said, you know, the Popes played here, and Nelson Mandela and Billy Joel, and then we played here, and then you guys played. We played here before.
In order. Yeah. I love it. Did you ever think when you were a little kid that you'd be doing this?
No, it really wasn't an ambition of mine. I was a basketball player. There's five children in my family, and my mother played organ and piano in the church that we went to. So it was required pretty much that all of us either sang in the choir or played an instrument. And my brothers and sisters all played instruments, and I took one piano lesson and got so frustrated that I quit, and I just played basketball. So my whole childhood, I wanted to be a basketball player, and I did. I eventually went and played basketball at the University of San Francisco. But my dorm room was right above the campus radio station. And so I'd hear these bass lines coming up through the floor all the time. At first it was kind of annoying. I was like, God, I can't sleep. I just got done practicing. I'm tired. I got to do homework, you know. And then I started like getting the thrill of music, hearing all these different styles of music that were coming out of the campus radio station. They'd have, you know, for 2 hours it would be hip-hop, and then 2 hours it would be punk rock, and then 2 hours it would be jazz, and, you know, whatever it was, reggae. And then at 6 o'clock it always went to Chinese news programming, you know, and it'd play Chinese music, you know. It was a great musical education. And so I bought a bass, and I would just copy the bass lines that I heard coming up through the floor. And that was sort of my initiation into music. But mainly I was writing lyrics. I'd write poems, and then I started performing these poems with other artists. And it wasn't until many years later when I actually began to play guitar. And now I can't do it without playing the guitar. It's like the mixture of the melody and the chords and the portability of just being able to go out on the street or wherever, beach or in my bed, sitting and just play. That's what I love about it.
What's the favorite song, your favorite song that you've written?
Well, there's many. On this new record, I like the song Life is Better with You.
I love that song.
That I wrote for Sarah. And there's a song called 1159 that'll be our next single. The first single, I'm Alive, I really love too. There's so many, you know, people ask me all the time, do you have a favorite? And it's usually whatever song I'm playing right there. or whatever song I've just written. You know, we were just back home for a week and we did some recordings. We wrote some new songs. And, you know, I haven't even learned them enough to actually play them out live. We just went in the studio and started recording. And that's what came out. So we're excited to get making a new record too.
Yeah, so you have a new record coming out?
Well, we should have one probably the end of next year. So we've been still, we never really stop writing, you know. When we're on tour, we always carry a little portable recording rig. And anytime we have ideas, we just put the ideas down on the recordings. And then we go back in later and sort of pull out the best artifacts that we can find and then try to put them into more, you know, concise songs, actually, from just random ideas.
So that's how it's formed, and then you come up with the title at the end when it's sort of that's the finish.
You know, sometimes I come up with a title in the middle of it, and that title then influences what I write about. You know, like the last record we put out before All People was called Sound of Sunshine. Mm-hmm. My appendix had ruptured on tour 4 years ago. I came really close to dying, and every day I was in the hospital. I was so grateful to be alive that I'd go to the window and I just lean in the window and I just feel the sun on my face, you know, I just feel like, wow, God, if I never felt this way again, I'd feel like so much loss, you know, and then to see my two sons there, to see all my friends there, I was just like so grateful to be alive. And so I started writing this song that was, you know, what does the sun feel like? What does it sound like? You know, and what does it taste like? And what's the feeling of the sun? And so I came up with the title, The Sound of Sunshine. And then all the songs on that record followed that theme of, you know, songs of gratitude, and positivity, and enduring through difficult situations, and letting go of pain and moving into the light.
And that's a theme in a lot of your songs. I'm going to die, but not tonight.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
I love that one.
Yeah,
that's actually my favorite.
Oh, nice.
Goes through my head a lot. We played it all the way down here from D.C., which was
nice.
Quite the drive. So
great.
We listened to everything multiple times and just love your music. Yeah. What are some of your influences?
Well, musically, I love artists that combine writing songs about their concern for the planet, and then they'll put them right next to a song about how much they love their girlfriend. You know, and you know, sometimes I'll get criticism from people to say, you know, you're not political enough. Where's that, you know, angry political songs that we love? And then other people say, God, he's too soft now. And then other people say, oh, we like the soft stuff. Shut up with the political crap, you know, like leave it alone, you know. And so, but I like the artists who did both because, for example, Bob Marley or John Lennon or Marvin Gaye or Stevie Wonder or Johnny Cash, you know, they were able to put songs that were like John Lennon write a song Imagine that's like this about this utopian view of, you know, the way the world could be if it was its best, you know, and then he'd write a song like Beautiful Boy or Woman, and that always made me feel like, well, he doesn't just care about the world just because it's in his head. He's concerned because it's in his heart, and he's concerned because he wants to see his child grow up in a better place. And that always moves me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's amazing. Okay, so switching gears a little bit.
Yeah.
So you don't wear shoes.
Yes.
How long has that been and why?
Well, I stopped wearing shoes on my birthday in 2000, so April of 2000. And I had been traveling to a lot of countries where people couldn't afford to wear shoes. And I'd take off my shoes and I'd go play soccer with kids, you know, and I couldn't even take three steps, you know, it'd be these gravelly fields, you know, and I couldn't do it. So I went home and I was just at my house and I was just thinking to myself, you know, what would it be like to not ever be able to afford shoes? So I took off my shoes and I thought, I'm going to go for 3 days barefoot just to see what it feels like and see if I can toughen up my feet. And so I went 3 days. My feet didn't get any tougher. So I went for a week. It still wasn't enough. I went for a month and then a year. And finally, after 10 years of being barefoot, I partnered with an organization called Souls for Souls.
I love them. Buddy yeah. Tester.
Yeah.
We write about
nice.
Buddy.
Yes. Yeah. And they bring, for people that don't know, they bring shoes to mm-hmm. people all around the world who can't afford them. And they started after Hurricane Katrina and moved on to Haiti. And now they're in, I think, 60 different countries. So we work with them at our concerts collecting shoes from our fans, as well as just getting the word out about what they do. The great work that they yeah. do 365 days.
Yeah, that's soulsforsouls.org.
Yeah.
Yeah, excellent work. I would have brought you shoes. I have a whole box of them.
Thank you.
Okay, so as we profile you, we have a Tips for Entrepreneurs
sure.
column. So actually, if you could give us tips in three topics,
yeah.
one on business in general, because mm-hmm. people might argue that a musician is a businessman, yeah. but I would disagree.
Mm-hmm.
Also, on getting into the music business, some people mm-hmm. just, that is their dream, and it's such a hard industry to
yeah.
break into. And then the last on some tips for making a difference.
Okay. Well, the first thing in terms of business is, like, in order to be a musician for 27 years, it requires an incredible team. So the first thing I'd say is that you have to learn to collaborate and to delegate responsibility to people who are better at it than who you are. But at the same time, it also helps you to know every job. So someone is your tour manager. It helps, like for me, the fact that I've tour managed my own tours before, driven the bus, booked the gigs, made the posters, called the radio stations, made the recordings. You know, I've done every job in it, so I know how it all works together. I also own a hotel in Bali. It's a yoga hotel. So the other thing is, you know, just in making a living, it's good to have some diversity.
Diversify.
So, you know, one thing goes cold, the other pot might be starting to catch fire.
What's it called?
It's called Soulshine.
Excellent.
Yeah. And we do yoga retreats there primarily. And, but I think the best advice that I've ever had was, I'm a big fan of this book called The Go-Giver. It's sort of a business parable. About a 100-page book, and it's a really fantastic book. But it's about giving and making sure that the quality of experience for the people that you come in contact with, whether it's somebody who is a consumer for whatever it is that you're bringing to people, or whether it's just somebody you meet. An example of that would be, somebody comes to you and you sell shoes, and they come in and they say, you know, I really want these red Nikes, you know, but you sell women's pumps or whatever. You can either say to them, we don't sell them, and turn away from them. Or you can say, hello, yeah, thanks for coming to my store. You know, we don't have those, but my friend up the street does. And you might think, well, God, you just sent somebody away, you lost a sale. But what happens is that person goes, God, I remember that guy, Michael, and spent the time to talk to me and help guide me to where there was what I needed. And that ends up being your, you know, good karma.
Good karma.
For lack of a better word. But in business, it's all about relationships, you know, and it's about connecting with people without having any reason. You know, you're not doing it because you're trying to get something. You're doing it because it's the right thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
And when you establish that goodwill, it leads to the longevity of what you're able to do. You know, you have a lot of people who then will recommend you, will call on you for your service when there's somebody who needs something that you have, you know, and it helps you to create community around your business.
Mm-hmm.
And that's ultimately the main thing, is that, you know, you can make something for one person, they're a satisfied customer. But if you do that, if you're able to replicate that hundreds, thousands, tens of thousands of times, then you're able to create a career out of something. The other thing, in terms of music, the music industry, that it's a fickle field. Mm-hmm. You know, one week this artist is huge, the next week it's another artist, and there's some artists that have been able to maintain long careers. And I think that the first thing that you need is passion for what you do, and the other thing is to recognize that not everybody is on stage singing in front of a microphone holding the guitar. There's, for every one person that's there, there's hundreds of people who have worked behind the scenes to make that show happen, you know, to be a producer, to be a manager, to be working in catering, to be working in music production and video, and, you know, publicity, whatever it is. There's so many people involved, and so if you have a passion for music, you know, follow it, but also follow it where your nose is taking you. Don't try to force yourself to just, you know, be one to play one role in it. If it's not working out for you, there's other ways to do it. And we always tell, you know, anytime I've had anybody new come into our band or our touring, you know, production team, I always tell them the same thing, which is that as soon as you walk out of your hotel room, you're on stage. Mm. So when you walk into the hotel, if you don't treat the guy who's picking up your bags at the door with kindness, he's going to remember that, and he's going to tell the next people that come through the door, oh, that guy, that band, they're assholes.
It's okay.
Yeah. And that, you don't want that. You want people saying, we want them back. We can't wait to see them again. And that way, when you do go through those ups and downs, people are willing to go through them with you. And otherwise, you go through a down period and they're like, well, he deserves it. You know?
Yeah. I'll avoid that.
Yeah. And then what was the last part?
It was the music business in general, and making a difference.
Making a difference is that's the joy of what we do, you know. You know, you can sell records, you can own a beautiful house, an amazing car, and have everything look perfect on the outside, and you just go back to the house and you're alone by yourself and you go, what did I do today? What did I make happen for somebody else? And so really making a difference is, people say to me a lot, what can I do? And I always answer it in reverse, do what you can. Uh-huh. So there was a woman who had seen my film about me traveling to Iraq and playing music on the street for people there. And she came to me in Denver and she said, now I'm a hairdresser and I saw your film, I was so moved, but I'm a hairdresser, you know, I don't know what I can do to make a difference in the world, you know? And then one day a woman walked into her salon who was undergoing chemotherapy. Her hair was falling out in clumps. And she sat her down in the chair and she just knew that there was nothing she could do with her hair except to cut it all off. Mm-hmm. And so she sat there and she talked with this woman as she, you know, shaved her head completely off. And the woman, and tears were running down her face, she was crying. And you know, they made her up, you know, and they made her really look as beautiful as she was. She wasn't, you know, from the inside out. And the from that experience, the two of them said, you know, we should do this one night a week. And so at her salon, there's one night every week where they close it down, and people who are going through, you know, chemotherapy come in there, and she takes care of all the beauty needs. So there's always a way that whatever we do, you know, whatever our talents, our traits are, that we can apply it to some way serving our community. It doesn't always have to be the big letter P politics, but the small letter P politics are, you know, of providing people hope and faith and making people feel better about themselves are really the ones that I feel make the bigger difference in, you know, strokes of pen in Congress.
Yeah. And your children's books do that. You wrote two children's books?
Yeah, two kids' books.
Yeah, they're really sweet. They're really fun. And they're really simple but powerful, I thought.
Yeah.
What inspired you to do that?
Well, the first one, I wrote this song called What I View, which is a song that was on one of my records. And a friend of mine had an idea, you know, you should turn that into a children's book, because it's a really great story about being yourself. And the whole book is about embodying the best characteristics of nature. So, like, if I was the sun, I'd radiate on, make people feel warm, and if I was the trees, I'd do this, and if there's a wind, I'd do this, you know. And And then the second book is called Where in the World is Away? Mm-hmm. And it's about recycling. And it's about two kids who are trying to find a place to throw away their bottle of juice. And they're sitting at a pond. I'm like, well, gosh, if you throw it in the pond, there's fish in there. And that's not really a way. And if you throw it in the forest, then there's, you know, it could set the forest on fire, you know, and that's not really a way. And then this bird comes along and takes him on this journey to discover this recycling center and takes him through the whole process of recycling. It shows it all in the book. And then at the end of the book, they realize that there is no place in the world that's away. There's just someplace else. And so the two kids decide to, they learn about reducing and reusing and recycling. The kids decide to reuse the bottle, and they both put a flower in it.
Yes. That's a perfect end to our interview.
Nice.
Thank you so much. We'll let you go take a nap.
I will do that.
And we'll look forward to seeing you at the Christmas Jam.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Michael Francis.
You're welcome.
So that's it for today's Incandescent Entrepreneur Show, where we always ask, what's your story? If you have a good one and would like to be interviewed on the Incandescent Entrepreneur Show, send me an email to hope@hopegibbs.com. Check back every Monday at noon for a new episode of the Incandescent Entrepreneur Show on the Incandescent Radio Network, www.incandescentradio.com. We look forward to talking to you next week. Here's to your incredible, indelible success.